Welcome to the You on the Camino de Santiago podcast, Season 4. This podcast is for and about people getting ready for their first ever pilgrimage on the Camino de Santiago in Spain, France, and Portugal. With your host, Camino guide, and longtime pilgrim, Nancy Reynolds of the Camino Experience. Hello, and welcome back to this week's episode of the podcast. This is another conversation with a pilgrim getting ready to head out on the trail, like so many of us are about to do. Hi, this is Nancy. And over the past couple of weeks, I have been recording the interviews for the next 6 weeks of episodes so they can be ready to release while I am on the Camino. After talking with these future pilgrims, I have to say, I am in awe at what people have to overcome to walk the Camino. Whether the challenges are physical, mental, emotional, or financial, wow, what courage and what perseverance. And I'm humbled by how much people feel they need the experience of walking the Camino. So many people are suffering and in need of healing. So many need to get away and tend to their hearts and spirits. I know I'm feeling that way, or at least I do anytime I spend too much time reading the news, but also with some of the craziness that shows up on social media. Related to social media, I want to mention something that may be relevant to those of you listening at the time this episode is released. Now, if you're tuning in at a later date, this will all be in the past. As this episode is releasing, there has been some trouble recently in one of the Facebook groups I have recommended in the past, and I've been involved in some controversial conversations there and in other Camino-related Facebook groups. Some people on Facebook are questioning my integrity, and so I want to invite my listeners to contact me directly if you have any questions or concerns about what's been happening in these groups. And if you are not familiar with this stuff, hang on, we'll get to my guest momentarily. I am being intentionally succinct with this because I don't want to take the airtime away from those of you who have not been involved. But I want you to know that related to this, I have removed one episode from this podcast series and two posts from my blog. So if you have any questions or concerns about this, please contact me directly at youonthecamino@gmail.com. I'll do my very best to answer any questions or concerns within 72 hours. Now, let's get on to the good stuff. My guest today is Kate from Australia. She will be leaving soon to walk the Camino Frances from Saint-Jean-Pied-du-Port, and you are going to hear that she is actually planning two Caminos at the same time. Kate has some great tips for us on what not to do when you are training for the Camino, and we have a fun chat about what to do with 8 days after the Camino. Kate asks some great questions, and hopefully I do them justice with my answers. Kate also shares about the DIY Plus Camino Planning Program I offer. What is that? The short answer is that this is all the content from my do-it-yourself Getting Started audio guide, plus 6 group coaching sessions and email support. I will be opening up registration for the next DIY Plus program in June. And if you'd like to learn more about the program and get on the waitlist for the next group, you can do that on my website, thecaminoexperience.com. Look for the tab for DIY Camino, and you can also follow the links in the show notes. I'll be sharing with you more about that program in the upcoming weeks. Okay, are you ready to meet Kate? Here we go. Okay, let's go ahead and say hello to Kate, dialing in from Australia. Hi, Kate.
Hi, Nancy.
Oh, I'm so excited that we get to talk about your Camino.
I know, I'm so excited. I'm so nervous too, but I'm so excited to be on your podcast and just feel absolutely honored and blessed that you chose me, you know, coming from Australia, the bottom, you know.
Yeah. Oh, I'm so glad. You know, you and I've been hanging out a bit. We're going to talk about that as well on our monthly Zoom calls in the program that I started last September, which is the DIY Plus Camino Planning Program. And so I want you to talk about that so people can understand what that is and what benefits that you've gotten out of it. But this is not all about promoting my program. And I want to make sure that that's clear, because I want to hear your story. I want my listeners to hear your story, and it'll come out as we talk why I chose you for this episode. So let's start where I always start, which is to put the pin in the map. So if you would share with us when you're going, what route you're walking, where you're going to start and finish, and how long you'll be out there.
Thank you, Nancy. I'm planning on leaving in mid-April, and I'm going to fly out of Melbourne all the way to Paris via Dubai, and then I'm going to catch the train from Paris to St. Jean-Pied-de-Port. And so I'm planning to walk from St. Jean-Pied-de-Port all the way to Santiago, and then all the way to Finisterre.
Oh, wow.
And then I'm hoping to go to Mishir as well, because I felt pulled and really wanted to walk the entire trail. But then I heard that the trail from Finisterre to Mishir was absolutely beautiful. And, you know, I figured I've already walked all this way. What's another couple of days walking to finish? And I really feel that that might be that time of, you know, inner reflection and just peace and quiet before I simulate back into Santiago. So that's what I'm planning.
That's a great strategy. And to really think ahead of time, you know, you don't know how you're going to feel. You don't know what place your mind and your head's going to be, but to think ahead, to allow that time for yourself. And if you don't need it, just keep having fun. Keep doing what you've been doing for 800 kilometers.
Yeah, exactly. And then I'm actually going to meet my parents. And then they're, whilst I'm finishing my Camino, actually starting their own Camino. So they're going to walk from Sarria to Santiago. And if my spreadsheet is correct, I will find them on the trail somewhere around day two or day three. So that's why I was really keen just to do that last couple of days of it's my time and just some quiet time before I go and help them, you know, walk their Camino.
Yeah. Okay. So this is the story within the story that I was interested in, that you have planned your Camino and simultaneously you have planned a Camino experience or Camino journey for your parents. How did this come to be?
Look, I've always been quite athletic growing up. And, you know, I felt the call to come and do the Camino and was really blessed to get some time off work, which we'll get to. And so when I told my parents that I was going to do this, I was a bit nervous actually, because I thought they were going to say, oh, don't be ridiculous. You know, that's far too far, because, you know, I had a fall 6 years ago and I broke my back literally in three places.
Oh, gosh.
I had significant spinal fractures. And so I've had this really long journey where I really had to put my life back together. I had to learn to walk again. Like, it was significant. And so that was only 6 years ago. And so since then, you know, I've really had to work hard to get my life back on track and to get my physical fitness back and, you know, get back to full-time work and, you know, all of that. So I think when I told my parents, oh, I'm going to go and walk the Camino, like, they were really excited for me because they knew it was on my bucket list after my fall that that was something I wanted to do. And I found out about it by accident because I saw the movie The Way and I went, oh, wow, like, that's amazing. I just want to go for a walk across Europe too, you know. But at the time it was like this goal that was just so unfathomable that I could even carry a pack, you know, and walk that far. So, wow. You know, I just tucked it away. So I'm going to give you the long story here.
I want the long story.
So when I'm in the kitchen visiting my parents saying, guess what, I'm going to go and do this, you know, my boss is just giving me time off work. Straight away they were supporting. My dad was like, my parents are in their 70s. So my dad was like, wow, well, oh, we have to be in Santiago at the finish line. Like, because he's always been at the finish line for my athletic adventures, you know, whether it was.
Oh, I got chills when you said that.
Yeah, so I was an athlete growing up, and so my parents have been really supportive, and so they've always been at my running events and things like that, and my fun runs, and cheering me on. And so my dad was like, right, well, if I have to be there, I want to watch you. If you're gonna walk all that distance, I'm gonna be in the, wherever you finish, and be there and meet you. And then, my mum was like, 100% supportive as well. She was like, oh, well, we're coming. And it was no question of can we afford it? Can we have the time to do it? It was just like, well, if you're gonna walk some ridiculous distance up and down mountains across an entire country, well, why wouldn't we be at the finish line to cheer you on?
Oh my gosh.
I know. I was like, oh, well, now I'm really doing it.
Oh wow. I'm so touched by that. And so here's the thing is your parents are in their 70s, which means you're no longer in high school or college, right?
Oh no.
Yeah,
No,
you're
I'm old. Like I've suddenly got to that age that women of a certain age, I've hit that milestone.
Okay, so women of a certain age, the way we've defined it lately, is women 50 plus.
Don't tell anyone.
You know what? I'm proud of it. I brag. This is what 58 looks like, people. Come on, let's go do stuff. We are not done. Yeah.
Well, I've just, just before I leave for the Camino, I turned 51. I suppose my little adventure and to celebrate my 50 years. For my 40th, I did my first Oxfam.
Would you say what that is? Because I bet a lot of people don't know what that is.
Oh, Oxfam's wonderful. So Oxfam is an event where it's a team event. So you have four people in a team and you walk or run 100 kilometers in 48 hours. So apparently it was a training method or program set up by, I think it was like the, now don't quote me here, but the SAS in the army or, those high elite soldiers where they have to be really fit. And then someone took the idea to use it as a extreme, I don't know, well, it's not really that extreme, but a training event or a competition, a team-based event that raises money for charity or, you can win. And so I heard about it when I was living in regional New South Wales. And so we put a couple of women's teams together. And so we had two teams of four. And the idea was, none of us had done this before. We just thought we'd go and do it. So we weren't trying to win. We weren't trying to break, 12 hours or something like that. We took, I think the first time I did it was well in the 30 hours. And then I went back the following year and I did it in 19 and a bit hours. But you can stop and have a sleep. The idea is you must complete it in the maximum time of 48 hours. Now, the ultra distance runners, they just go out there and they run the whole thing and they'll be done in 12 to 14 hours. But for us regular people, like to walk 100 kilometers, like it's just like when I first thought about it, I was like, that's like, because I'm from Geelong, that's like walking from Geelong to Melbourne and then starting to walk back again. Like it's huge.
It's a long ways. Yeah.
Yeah.
And for some people, they go walk the Camino. They say it this way, I'm only doing the last 100 kilometers. That's not an only. That is a huge endeavor for many people. And the people who start in Saint-Jean-Pied-du-Port, they have this perspective that that's this, that maybe that's not as big of a deal, but it is. And it is as transformational in some ways as walking the entire way from Saint-Jean.
So to get back to my parents,
Yes, please.
they were really supportive, very excited, couldn't wait, wanted to come to Spain and eat tapas and drink wine and be at the finish line. But then, a few days later, that actually evolved. My mum was like, well, hang on a minute. If I'm coming all the way to Spain, I want to walk it too. And so for her, then she really drove it. Like, now, my mum is not athletic, all of the fittest of specimens these days. But she had this calling, probably stronger than me, that was like, no, I'm coming too, and I want to walk it. So, your program has been instrumental in helping me not only plan my own Camino, but then how to tailor it to two people who are in their older years who, my dad has a great daily walking habit. My mum doesn't because there's always something else to do. but how to make it manageable, you know, for them so that they can achieve it. And, you know, I am a bit stressed about it. I don't know how they're going to do it, hence why I'm going back to hold their hand and just to be supportive. But, you know, I'm really proud of them. They have absolutely stepped up to the challenge, Nancy. They've learned how to do Nordic walking. They've, you know, getting out and they're practicing and, you know, they're thinking about it and strategizing. Well, you know, we've got to get, you know, all the way from Melbourne to Saria by ourselves because I'll be busy. I'm still walking. Mm-hmm. I'm on my own Camino still. And, you know, if I have a few hiccups, I mightn't get to them on day two or day three. You know, I've had my own injury.
Mm-hmm.
So I mightn't be able to do what I'm planning to walk every day, or I might need extra rest days, or who knows what's going to happen on my own.
We don't know.
That's right. I'm trying really hard to set them up to be for success and to be self-sufficient with independence that I will get to you when I get to you, but you'll be okay. And I'm on WhatsApp.
Yes, exactly. WhatsApp is such a good app to use to stay in contact. So this is to me a little mind-blowing. I got to be honest. You planned your Camino, which is how many days? 44 days?
At the moment, it is sitting at exactly 44 days.
Okay. So you planned this 44-day journey for you, which, by the way, it's no small feat to get to Europe from Australia. What, it's total of 24 hours of flying?
I think total for me is close to 24 hours of flying, but that's just to get to Paris. And then I have to overnight in Paris. So I'm just staying out near the airport. And then I just wanted the slow start, as you keep talking about in your program and on your podcast. And so I thought, yes, I could hop on another plane and fly to Biarritz, but you know what? I don't want to. I want to hop on one of those amazing fast bullet trains and I'm going to sit up there and just be still and just look at the countryside and just let everything behind me go so that by the time I arrive in Saint-Jean, I'm cleared my head from work. I've cleared my head from the stress of getting out, getting on that plane, getting out the door. Have I got everything? To just absorbing the atmosphere and just relaxing and going, wow, I'm here. I'm in France.
Well, and you should be impressed. I'm going back to this. You planned this 44-day trip for yourself and then added on some overlap for your parents. You planned their whole trip as well, right?
So their plan is to be 9 days. So this is where I'm blessed. Like, I've been back to my boss 3 times to extend my annual leave because I went to her, and this is another whole story. I went to her and said, oh, you know, I really need some time out. I'm tired. You know, I need a bit of a rest, you know. And I, you know, after the pandemic, like, you know, I suppose we could get to the why. I'm a nurse and I'm a senior healthcare leader.
You almost don't have to say anything else. You're a nurse. We just came off a pandemic, but please do go ahead.
Yeah. And, you know, that was tough. That was a really tough few years for nurses. And you know what? I am so proud of my profession and the way we just went right and we stood up and we got on with it. Now, we were very lucky in Australia. You know, we were able to shut our borders and really hunker down. And we had the advantage of seeing what was going on around the world and Europe, especially in Italy. And at the time when Italy was heartbreaking to watch, my team, I was leading a really big team in operating services. That was my job. And we were petrified, Nancy. To be truthful, we are watching what's going on in Lombardy and my whole team were beside themselves. They were like, this is what's coming. We haven't got a vaccination. These patients are going to die on us. How are we going to look after them? Like, it was, how are we going to intubate them? How are we going to extubate them safely? How are we going to look after them in recovery? Like, it was a really big deal. And like, at the time I was living by myself, so it was okay. I could go to work and work really hard and come home and, you know, I had family and elderly parents, and I basically said to mum and dad, you've got to stay home because I don't want you to get sick and do your online groceries and I'll see you when this is over. And we just got on with it. Now, we were very lucky, you know, it didn't get that bad and we planned and prepared and got in there and you know, got ready. And then once we started getting our vaccinations, once I had my first vaccination, I then, you know, contributed to vaccinating everybody. So I spent every weekend, all day Saturday, all day Sunday, out helping, you know, vaccinating my community in Melbourne and edge of Melbourne and what have you. And they were the most, some of them had no English. You know, we have a high migrant population, and so they had no understanding, but they knew they had to do it. And so you're trying to, I don't know, it was really tough. And you're doing it in full PPE, and it was hard. I was tired. I think I was tired. And, you know, we talk about the why. So why am I, you know, doing all of this? I was just, I think I was burnt out, like every all nurses. We were just mentally tired and burnt out. And the world, we've recovered. The pandemic's over and everyone's like, wow, let's get back on with life. And so everyone's jumping back into life with great enthusiasm. But there's a whole, I feel that the nurses and the medical staff, you know, we're expected just to get on with it again, but we didn't get the opportunity to stop. We didn't get the opportunity to just take time out and say, we made it, you know. I don't know. I feel really quite emotional about it, but it was tough for everybody. And we were so blessed, in Australia. But anyway, I don't know. I suppose I look back, it was our call to arms. Like, you know, we had the Great Wars, World War II, the women jumped up and took over the farms and, you know, contributed. And I guess the nurses, it was my way in my lifetime. It was something that I could help with and contribute to. But the effect of that is tiring. I think I was mentally fatigued.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, just following the news stories about the medical profession throughout the pandemic, it's hard to miss that. It's hard to miss the fact that it was so incredibly taxing in a way that we are not accustomed to, in a way that we had not built up that strength or those muscles to be like that. And so I can understand why you would be tired, burnt out, and needing a rest. I had another pilgrim who I'm coaching share with me that she just felt tired to her core and just like, just needing a revitalization. And the Camino is a great way to do that. It will wear you out physically, but it will lift you up emotionally and spiritually.
Exactly. And post the pandemic, there's this new word, language coming around about well-being and mindfulness. And, you know, up until a few months ago, I just thought, oh, like it's just another term, fooey, whatever. But I went to a conference in Adelaide just late, you know, late last year, and they were really talking about, it was a nursing conference, you know, and we were talking about workforce shortages and how we're going to get our workforce back because nurses are leaving in droves and, you know, similarly around the world. And they were talking about the importance of mindfulness and well-being. Now, up until that day, I thought, you know, fooey, this is just another trendy term. But I was reflecting on it and I was driving back from Adelaide to, you know, Melbourne, and I was driving through some beautiful countryside and it just suddenly hit me, is this what the Meseta's like? Now, you talk about the rolling hills with the wheat and the horizon because, you know, we've got fast distances here. And I was looking at the sky and the dotted gum trees and the wheat fields and those gentle rolling hills and the puffy white clouds. And it just popped into my head, wow, is this what the Camino is like? Is this what the Meseta is like? And then that's when I realized, well, you need a career break. You're really tired mentally. You're physically tied to the core, completely relate to that. I'm just tired. And so I thought, wow, I need to go. Yeah. And so I have a window of opportunity at the moment. And so literally the next day I rolled into my boss's office and said, I've got something on my bucket list. I really need some time off. Can I have? And I had no idea, Nancy. I didn't know how long it was going to take. I hadn't even researched it. I had done nothing. But I just had this idea in my head that I wanted to go for a walk. I wanted to just slow my life down to walking pace. And I wanted to check out. I wanted to do something for me, not be a sister, not be an aunt, not be a daughter, not be someone's boss, not just get rid of all those labels and do something for me. And so here I am.
Yes. That gets me excited right there. Yeah. it's such a brave and courageous step, and it's such a strong declaration of self-care and of a commitment to your own well-being. I'll use their word.
Exactly. So now I understand, what does well-being look like? What does mindfulness look like for me? Because I've always had a really good work-life balance. I've always had a good exercise habit. I've loved walking. I've loved exercising. You know, that is part of my daily routine. But this is different. You know, mental health, well-being, mindfulness, it's different and it's important.
It is. And it reminds me to go explore those things for myself and to find out what meaning I would ascribe to those words. What's well-being for me? What's mindfulness for me? I know I can find it on the Camino, and I also want to find it in everyday life. And the thing about the Camino that I learned is that when you're on the Camino, you're practicing that. It's what you do all day. That's your job, is to practice being in the present moment. And by the time you get finished, you're pretty good at being in the present moment. Real heightened level of well-being.
Wow. I look forward to that because I'm a very enthusiastic person, as you well know.
I love that about you.
I have high energy. My daily levels of high energy are a lot. And I think it will be really good for me to just slow everything down, slow my mind down, slow life down, slow my pace down, and just have a rest.
Yeah.
Now, and see what's next. I don't know, Nancy. I've still got 20 years of work left. What do I want to do? I don't know. Will the Camino tell me? Probably not.
Maybe. Maybe it will do for you what it did for me, which was took away the silly questions and gave me bigger questions to answer. No answers. I didn't get any answers, but I started asking better questions.
Exactly. But you know what? That's okay. That's where the real learning comes.
That's right. Many people will tell you that the Camino starts when you reach Santiago de Compostela.
Agreed. But you've got to be awake and you've got to have your ears open and you've got to be listening.
That's right. Oh, man. No small feat there. All right. Let's talk about your training journey. So this is different from anything else you've done. So you jumped in with great enthusiasm into your training. Will you talk about your training and how that went?
Yes. So when I committed to the Camino, I already had a really strong exercise habit. You know, my daily walking habit was probably easily 6 to 8 Ks. I loved walking before work, and watch the sunrise and then go to work, because I felt if I'd done something for myself first, I could give to others. You know, it didn't matter what happened to my day, I've done something for myself first. So I loved getting up in the dark and walking and watching the sunrise. So I was already reasonably fit. So I committed to the Camino. All the jigsaw pieces are falling in. I'm suddenly planning my Camino. I'm planning my parents' Camino. I've been back to my manager 3 times and I've now got 10 weeks off.
Wow.
So I thought, right, next, everyone's supporting me. I've got to get fit and I've got to be ready for this big event. So I only committed to doing the Camino in about August, mid-August last year. And so I thought, that's not very much time. So upped the training, and just tried to get to a 10-kilometer a day walking habit. So I do some in the morning, some at night after work and what have you. And then you talked about conditioning in one of your podcasts, and in your DIY community, it had a whole section on preparing and things like that. And so I thought, oh, that's a really great way of thinking about it. I'm not training for an Olympic event. I'm not training to win a marathon. I'm conditioning. I'm just getting my body used to the extra steps of walking. I'm increasing my walking habit. And then I'm going to condition my back. So I'm going to get my backpack, an old backpack. I'm going to put some water in it. So I did put 2 liters of water in it. And then I thought, oh, I need it to be a little bit heavier. I've got to get used to probably carrying, 4 to 5 kilos. So I'll go and get a couple of dumbbells, wrap them in a towel. So I did. I got 2 2-kilo dumbbells, or a 1 and a 2 or something. I can't remember what I did. Wrapped it in a towel, put it in my backpack. I thought, right, I'm going to go for a walk. And I've got to start conditioning because I haven't worn a backpack for a long time. I haven't thought about it. I need to condition my back and my legs to the extra weight. So I did, off I went. So I'm listening to your podcast and I'm, you know, striding out with my walking poles because I've learned how to do Nordic walking. So I've got my Nordic walking poles, I've got my backpack on and off I go. And I just go out and smash out, I don't know, I think I did 14 kilometers or something. When I got back, I'm a little bit achy in my hip. Oh, well, you know, we'll just ignore that.
Maybe it will go away.
That's exactly right. So I'll do it again, you know. And so then I went out the next day because it was the weekend and I had the time to do a longer walk, you see. So I did it again. And then I got home again and it was like, oh, this is a bit sore. I thought, oh, well, I'll just, you know, elevate it and, you know, typical nurse, you know, put a bit of ice on it, it'll be right. Take 2 Panadol and get on with it. And so then I went back to my normal daily training and I thought, well, I probably should wear my backpack and practice with my poles in the morning. So I started just doing my shorter walk in the morning with my backpack and my poles. But the injury got worse and the pain, Nancy, oh, unbearable in my hip. Anyway, got to the point where I couldn't walk 2 kilometres. And I just thought, this is ridiculous. Like, I'm fit and this is pulling me up. Now, by now it's sort of mid-November, December, and I thought, I need help. So, of course, that takes time. By the time you get a referral to a physio, and then I had an ultrasound, and then they diagnosed I did have quite a serious injury. I'd torn a muscle in my hip and I have bursitis. So I thought, oh, all right. So then they said, you've got to stop. So I had to do this sort of, you know, strength training and things like that, and didn't get better. So then they decided, all right, we'll do put an injection, cortisone. So, but that, you know, so we did that, but that absolutely pulled me up because then I had to do nothing for another 2 weeks.
Which is not your natural set point.
Definitely not, Nancy. You have no idea the struggle of doing nothing. And in my head, I'm going, this is ridiculous. I'm now in January and I'm doing nothing. So then we got through that, and then my physio therapist developed. Actually, I was really blessed. He's actually more than that. He's an exercise physiologist. I didn't even know there was a difference or such a thing, but there is. And he developed this rehab program. Now, I have never been to a gym and lifted weights a day in my life. You know, I was an athlete. I was a long distance runner, and we ran. I just would go out running. You know, that's what I did to train and, you know, what have you. Anyway, so here I am doing this gym program. It hurts. Like, I'm lifting muscles I've never done before. And anyway, so we did it for a couple of weeks, and then finally it got to the point where I was healing. So it was great. The cortisone's working and what have you. And so he was thrilled. So he finally gave me clearance to go. So I was like, yay. And then I had another hiccup, but that's okay. That's where the learning comes, you know.
So let me ask you, what was it that aggravated or caused this injury? Was it that you jumped in distance or jumped in how much weight you were carrying too fast?
Exactly, Nancy. And that's the whole point. My injury is what they call a RSI injury, repetitive strain injury. Mm. And what happened was, even though I was really fit, I started too quickly. So I increased not only my distance, but increased the weight and my load too quickly. I didn't take those baby steps. And I think that's the key nugget.
Yes.
The key nugget of what I'm trying to say is it's really important to A, first, if you're going to come and do something like the Camino, to develop a daily walking habit. Now, I don't care if it's 30 minutes a day or it's only an hour a day. The important thing is to have a consistent daily walking habit.
That's right. And listen, let's be honest. You might have to start at 15 minutes. You might have to start at 20 minutes and build up to 30 minutes a day. But the point is to put on your walking shoes and walk out the door. Even if you get down to the end of the driveway and back, or even if you get to the corner and back, every day, boots on, take a walk. And then eventually you can start to add in more time. And then that backpack part. So you put it in, what did you say? 5 kilos, which is about 11 pounds. Yeah. Yeah. But that makes a difference. That changes everything.
It did. It changed my gait. It changed the way I moved. It changed the way my feet landed.
The way your feet rubbed.
Exactly. And that's what caused the injury.
Yeah. Mm. One of the early experiences I had when I was just starting to lead pilgrims, I had a friend who was from California as well, who I met on the trail, and we saw each other a bunch of times. We weren't walking together, but I knew he was getting ready to start. And he was a few days behind me coming from Saint-Jean-Pied-du-Port. And he's this tall, strong, you know, manly man. And he hadn't trained with his backpack. And so he gets to the trail and he's got his, for him, big guy, 20 pound, maybe 10 kilo backpack. By the time he got to Pamplona, his feet were torn up because he had added extra weight, which changed everything. And so people who say, oh no, you don't need to train, you can do it on the Camino. You can, but I'd rather ease into the consequences of that before I get there.
Agreed. And you know what, when I first thought about doing the Camino and I was using your planning tools, I was like, oh yeah, I can easily walk 25 Ks a day, or I can walk 30 Ks a day. Yeah, I probably can. But the difference is, I've got to do this for 44 plus days. That's if my injury doesn't come back. What if my RSI comes back and I'm halfway up a mountain? Like, I'm going to have to slow my pace down, slow my daily stages down. I might be dropping back to 10 or 15 kilometers a day, but that's okay. Still moving forward.
That's right.
I think you cannot underestimate conditioning. Reframe it.
Conditioning. That's right.
Conditioning your feet, conditioning your back, conditioning your legs to a daily walking habit and build it up slowly.
Very good. I love that. I love that. Yeah. And you'll get there.
Absolutely.
Yeah. You'll get there. You'll get wherever you get to, one step at a time. Good. So when you first started your planning process, you decided back in last August, you initially had an idea of how you were going to do it. I think you told me you were looking at booking everything in advance through a company.
Correct.
Would you talk about how you decided to do that and how you decided not to do that?
Yeah, great, Nancy. When I committed to the Camino, I really, you know, I put in for my leave, got it. So it's suddenly real. Right, where do I start? And so, you know, you do like everybody does and you start Googling. And, you know, I found some different travel companies that would help just book the whole thing. So I started talking to one of them and, you know, they said, well, we'll book your private accommodation from start to finish. These are the stages. And they sort of really probably told me how it was going to be done. And, you know, and then they gave me the itinerary. And I was like, oh, yeah, okay. And then the price. And it was just ridiculous. I just couldn't. It wasn't in my budget. Now, so then I started thinking, well, I thought it was over. I thought, well, I can't do it like this. So I love listening to podcasts. And anyway, I was looking around and I found a podcast and it happened to be yours. And I thought, oh, this looks interesting. It's got a pretty little yellow shell. And I thought, oh, well, I'll go for a walk and listen to this one. Anyway, from day one, episode one, your podcast was just so amazing. So I just started listening to it. And this was sort of happening simultaneously while I was doing my research. And the more I listened to your podcast, the more confidence I got, like, and the more I learned and the more knowledge. And I was like, hang on a minute, Nancy's giving me all this information on a podcast. And then I learn about your DIY program. And I'm like, it's all there. I don't have to rely on some expensive third party to plan it all for some fee. I can actually enjoy the journey. I can plan my Camino and I can use your DIY program to have the experience that I want. And the more I listened to your podcast and the more I dived into it, the more confident I got, to the point now where, you know, I ditched them long ago and I have just been working through your modules and planning it in the stages and just progressing slowly but surely all the way through. So I've used it to work out how many kilometers can I walk in a day. I've used your program to work out my parents physically. How many legitimately kilometers can they walk per hour at their age? Well, yeah, they might be able to do 4, but I reckon we're really at 3 with rests. It might be as low as 2 on a hill. I don't know. But like, so I've used all your tools and they're amazing to plan the Camino. So I can't recommend it highly enough, Nancy. And it is so generous of you to put it all together and then just to share it with everyone. It's amazing. I can't speak more highly of it.
Oh, thank you.
It's all there. I love it. Love it. Love it. Love it.
Thank you. You are exactly who I created this for.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
And there's bits I haven't looked at yet because I'm not up to that, but that's okay. It's there. I know where it is.
And that's how it's designed. It's designed to take you from the very beginning, just like the podcast does, takes you from the very beginning. I call it the getting started phase, where you decide those really big, important decisions, like when is the right time for you to go? Not for me, but for you, when is the right time for you to go? And how long will you take to walk the Camino? And who will you go with? Is it better to go alone, or is it better to go with a group, or is it better to get your sister to go with you? And then how much will it cost so that you can put together a realistic budget? But before you put together your budget, you have to know where you're going to sleep and what kind of meals you're going to go for, and if you'll use the luggage transfer system. Yeah, a lot of things. So that first part of getting started is, for me, very foundational. We have to answer those questions. And I love to see people engage with those questions rather than just take a guidebook and go, well, the best weather is in this month, so I'll go then. See, because weather is going to change. I love this. Your seasons are opposite of ours in the Northern Hemisphere, right? So I go, no, go in May. And you're like, that's not what May is like. Go in July. July's not like that. Hold on a second. Yeah. So we have to think about those different things. I love that you took you're actually using it exactly the way that I intended it to be used, which is to start at the beginning, go through the getting started, and then go to the getting ready phase. How do you take your plan and get ready to go? Building your itinerary if you want to, building your overall trip plan. So I love that. I love that. It makes me really happy to hear that you're using it and it's really benefiting you.
Oh, no, thank you. It's just fabulous. I can't recommend it highly enough. Because I think, you know, you're called to do this and then you think, oh, I'm going to go for a walk and drop out. I'm going to have a career break. I'm going to, you know, just go and slow my whole life down to walking pace and empty my head and see what's in there. But when you start the logistics of it, it's a lot. And so this just breaks it down into little manageable baby steps and shows you how, like, I just love your videos of how simple things, like how to book a train from Paris to Saint-Jean, or how to book the train from Madrid, like for my parents. Because we're a long way over here and, you know, I haven't traveled for a while. I'm a bit out of the habit, you know, like it just makes it so easy. Yeah, it's just great. So, you know, that Madrid train, I don't think it's going to, the date my dad and mum on it isn't going to be ready to open to book, and I'm going to be gone on the other side of the world. So, you know, I'm going to show my dad how to do it, and then he'll have to do it, and he'll be able to because you've given him the tools. So he'll follow it exactly and he'll watch the video.
Yep, give him the video. Exactly.
When the date opens, he'll be so proud of himself that, you know, his train ticket.
I love that. And that's in part three of the DIY program, which is getting to Saint-Jean-Pied-de-Port. So we're getting started, we're getting ready, and we're getting to our starting point. And then the part that you haven't looked at yet, that's the one I sent you recently, which is the On the Trail guide. Have you looked at that at all?
Oh, look, I'm an A-type personality and I like to have a sneak peek. Absolutely, Nancy. I've opened it up and I've looked at the contents page and I've gone, oh, that looks so good. But you know what? I'm still a little way out from starting. I'm going to wait.
Good.
I probably will start looking at that when I'm on the plane and on the train, when it's really real and I'm coming, and then I've emptied my head from work and I'm just focusing on my journey and what's ahead, and then I'll start really getting excited. At the moment, I think I'm still recovering from my injury. I've still got this major part-time job of rehab to get ready to go. I'm still gathering my gear. I'm still working out the logistics. So I think my head is still a bit busy with all that operational logistical planning still.
Yeah.
So I haven't moved into that's all done tick. This is real.
Yeah.
I'm going. Now what's next? What have I got to look forward to? Do you know what I mean?
I do. And that's exactly how it's designed. So that you don't even have to open up that On the Trail guide until you're on your way to the airport or on the flight, you know, going over. It does need Wi-Fi, or a data connection to access. But yeah, as soon as you're on the way, that's when you open that up.
I feel like it's like a special Christmas or birthday present. Like it's all there wrapped in a beautiful bow. And I'm just going to savor unpacking it. And then I'm going to go, oh, I just can't believe I'm here. I can't believe I'm going. I can't believe I've got all this time off. And yeah.
And I get to go with you in your ear.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. So this is what you all don't know is that I'm imagining hanging out with you on the Camino. I'm imagining sitting next to you at the kitchen table as you map out your itinerary. And I'm imagining walking up the cobblestone street in the middle of Saint-Jean-Pied-du-Port with you going, look, that's the prison. And the citadel is right up that hill. And this is where we get the best croissants. Yeah, that's what I'm imagining. Mm-hmm. Selfishly.
No, I'm with you.
Yeah. So I just want to say a couple things about that. So I've talked about my audio guide quite a lot to my podcast listeners, as well as to my email list. And the DIY program, I haven't talked about quite as much because it was actually sort of a test run with your group when you and the other two ladies signed up for it last September. But I'm going to be opening up another group in June. And so I want to make sure that anybody who is interested in hearing more about it goes to my website and looks at what it's all about. And the link is in the show notes for that. And also get on my email list because that's how you're going to know when registration opens for the next class. We'll call it a class because it's what that was 6 or 8 months together getting ready for the Camino. And then for people who want the true DIY No Plus, that's the Camino Frances Getting Started audio guide. So that's all on my website. So June, coming soon. Yeah. Excellent. So let's see, what else do we want to talk about? Do you have any questions for me? I know we've spent so much time together getting ready, but any questions I can answer for you?
Yes. Like, I feel like I have asked you so many questions along the way already, but I do have a couple ones that are just burning in my brain. I've only just discovered when I thought I'd walk Santiago to Finisterre to Mishia, I thought that was the only way to do it. But I've just realized in the back of, I don't know which guidebook you recommended it, whether it was in the Braille book or the Moon book, you can actually do it the other way. Mm-hmm. Santiago to Mishia to Finisterre.
Yes.
Do you have any thoughts of which way?
I don't have any personal experience walking to Mishia. I have walked to Finisterre twice, but I have not walked to Mishia. So I unfortunately can't weigh in on that. And the one piece that I'm eager to do is between Mishia and Finisterre. It's a 30-kilometer walk that you can divide into two stages between those two along the coast-ish. You know, there's parts where it goes inland just a little bit, but unfortunately, I can't weigh in on that. But let me tell you what I do with questions I can't weigh in on. I go to Facebook, to the Facebook groups, and I ask people there. So I recently heard the term crowdsourcing. And so what I would do is crowdsource in the Facebook groups or on the English language Camino Forum, which is run by Ivar in Santiago. That is a wealth of information. I will put the links for all of those in the show notes so people can find that. But yeah, going to the crowd is the way that I get answers to those kinds of questions. It's where I also go for questions like, what rated sleeping bag should I have for October? I don't know. Yeah.
Okay. I just figured the answer will come apparent on the trail.
Yeah, it may. And it could also be determined by if you want to book someplace to stay in each of those places and you check in Finisterre's busy on that day, but you can get a room in Mishia that night. Well, go there first and then go to Finisterre. Yeah. Those are the kinds of decisions that unfold on the trail.
Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, listening to your podcast, I've really, you know, we've heard of pilgrims who have booked every night on the trail and you think, oh yeah, I could do that because that suits me. I'm an A-type personality and I like to be organized. But then you hear their stories when they come back. It was like, oh, you know, like Andreas and Andrea, I think was, they got COVID and then they got really sick and then they had to cab it. And then it was like, oh, you know, you have this deadline. Mm-hmm. And so I decided then that no, you know, I don't think I want to do it like that. I'm going to try Nancy's other way, which is first 4 nights to Pamplona, And then I'm just going to wait and see.
See what happens.
I've got a spreadsheet. I know roughly what I have to do each day. I've got your planning tool of how far I'm up. Perhaps I want to walk. I know what the towns are. You know, I'll have my WhatsApp. I know how to book accommodation because of your program. So I'm just going to wait and see, hey, how busy is it? What's the weather like? How am I feeling? Are I feeling really strong and well that I could walk further each day, or are I tired and need to back off a little bit again? I'm going to listen to my body.
Well, and especially in your case, since you're coming off of your back injury 6 years ago and this recent injury, you are going to have to see how your body does and see what its needs are.
Mm.
Yeah. So that's actually a really good reason not to commit to set stages. And then I don't know if you heard the episode with Don and Fiona, who booked the entire trip, and they did it because I think it was Fiona said, if I booked my whole trip myself, if I did all the arrangements, I would just be second guessing myself all day long, every day. So she let go of that task and let somebody else book it. There were only a couple times when they wished they had a little flexibility in their schedule, and it was fine.
Mm. Yeah, I do remember that. Now from Melbourne.
It's going to be fine, however you do it. And I want to just keep saying that. That's why, you know, sometimes I think, wow, I say yes to everything, you know, like, yeah, that's the great way to do it for you. Because the key phrase is for you, not for anybody else. We're talking only about you. What's the right way for you?
Mm. So I'm going to try and only book a day or two ahead and just see how I'm feeling. And, you know, I might make a friend, Nancy. You know, I'm going solo.
That's
I'm sure I'll make a friend, and I might want to walk with them for a couple of days. And then, you know, I might need an earlier rest stop than I planned. And I've got four rest days in the major cities. But yeah, I just see what happens. It's all about the journey. Mm. I can plan it and then smash through it. But I've planned it enough. I have the confidence from your program. I know what to do. I have the information at my fingertips. I've planned the logistics enough to, I'm at the start line. I'm through the first few days. I'm got used to it. I'm ready. I know the routine. You know, I've adjusted to the pace and the slowness and the simplicity of being a pilgrim. Yeah. And I've hopefully made a friend or two along the way.
I can't imagine you wouldn't.
Then I think for me, the whole reason of taking time out and coming to do the Camino is for that unknown and just to be still and just to see what unfolds. And I'm looking forward to that. And yes, you know, I've been listening to your other pilgrims who have so generously shared their stories and their nuggets and, you know, from their post Camino wrap-ups and, you know, places that they've absolutely loved and wouldn't miss. And, you know, so I've jotted those down, and if I can, I'd love to stay at this particular Albuquerque at this place and this particular one. But if it's busy or full, I'll find other places. Like, it'll evolve. It'll happen.
Yeah.
I don't want to be so programmed that I miss the stillness and I just miss things. I just want to, you know, be open, you know. I tell my nieces and my nephews when I'm dropping them off to school, you know, click, click, turn your ears on, close your mouth. We've got our listening ears on, you know.
Love that. Yeah. Just turn on all those senses and take it in. And then in the moment, decide what to do with it.
Yeah. Just turn my ears on. Have my listening. You know, just listen to what's going on around me. Just be still and just walk.
Walk.
Keep walking.
Slow your life to the pace of walking and let's see what happens.
Yeah.
Great. Any other questions I can answer for you?
Absolutely.
So, all right, let's have them.
Luggage transfer. Now, you and I have debated this for months. And initially, I am going to use luggage transfer because I can't carry a pack. My parents, there's no way they can carry a pack. So it's a given. It's a gimme. We are absolutely going to do it. I'm going to pre-book it. But I've just realized I can pre-book it from Australia and say, right, I'm going to start here and I'm going to finish here. But the bits in between, because I'm not locking myself into a set program, I know I want to have a rest day in Pamplona and at Burgos and in Leon. Can I just And I am trying to get to the point where I could just carry what I need for a few days at a time and ditch the suitcase. So when I get to Pamplona, I'm thinking it's been a practice run of 4 days of what I actually need and don't need. And then I was thinking maybe I could carry in my pack just enough things to get through the next, 5 days to my next rest stop or whatever that is. Can I send my suitcase just to, say, Burgos? I know it's further than that, but, for an example, and then to where my next rest day is. And then when I catch up with my bag, I can then top up my blister equipment, any toiletries or anything I realize I needed, and then send it to the next rest stop and then keep walking. So I've got that freedom of, I can walk a bit further today. Where do I want to stay? But at the same time, I've got that security mm-hmm. of my bag being not too far away and not sending it all the way to Santiago. Like I can still got that little bit of attachment. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I do know what you mean. And the answer is yes. You can do any of it. It depends on how much time you want to spend on those logistics. So the Spanish Postal Service is called Correos, Correos. And you can send luggage and parcels from post office to post office to post office. That's different than the luggage transport services. So that is actually going to the post office, having them slap a label on something and send it in their truck to the post office. If you do that, you need to make sure that you are in the place where you're picking up on the day that the post office is open. And most post offices are closed on the weekends and holidays. So there's a little bit of logistical maneuvering if you're going to actually send it with Correos. Now that's Correos, the post office, not Correos luggage transport, because the Correos does offer stage by stage by stage luggage transport. So when you say that you're booking your luggage transport in advance, have you chosen a company for that yet?
No, it's sort of, number.
It's down there on the list. Yeah. So let's look then at what happens if you want to use the luggage transport service to move your bag like that. So you can either pay in advance online using Correos or Jacotrans. I always say it wrong. Using Jacotrans, that's Jacotrans, like jalapeno, Jacotrans. The J in Spanish is a hard one for me. So that company and Correos and a couple others will move your bag stage by stage by stage. And you can prepay using a credit card online and pay in advance for all of your stages and then assign your pickup and drop off destination each day. You can also not prepay, but do it day by day by day simply by getting one of the envelope tags at wherever you're staying. And the envelope tag has a place on the outside where you write in your name and contact information and where you're going, and then you put the money inside the envelope. Now, with those stage by stage by stage ones, you can actually cover more than one stage. How do I say this? It's possible, but there's a higher risk of wondering where your bag ended up and if you and your bag will be reunited. So for example, if you are in, let's say, Pamplona, and you want to send your bag ahead to Burgos, that's more than a week away, Correos might be the best choice for that because you'll send it, it'll go to the post office, you'll pick it up. The luggage transport services like to do things in stages of up to 25 or 30 kilometers. When you go past that, then you're not reunited with your luggage every night. And that's not really what this system was designed for. It's designed to keep your luggage with you stage by stage by stage. So in addition to having to make sure that the company is going to get it delivered to the right place, the place that you're sending it has to know that it's coming and that you're coming 2 or 3 days later. So it's just a question of what logistics do you want to try to sort out?
Thank you. That sounds really complex.
Yeah.
It's actually probably easy to keep my bag with me.
It is. Yeah. A little trick, the company Correos is a Spanish company. So Correos starts in Roncesvalles and goes to Santiago. When you sign up for that whole block of the Camino, you're paying a flat rate and it covers no matter how many days it takes you to get there. So let's say, for example, it's 180 euros and you take 20 days. It's the same price if you take 40 days. So especially if you're taking a longer amount of time, it really actually benefits you to prepay and have Roncesvalles to Santiago prepaid and then divide it up into more stages. It saves you money.
Yeah, no, I totally get it. And that's really clever. And I think that's probably the way in the back of my mind. Like, I have read that module in your program and it's there. And I've listened to your podcast on luggage transfer 3 or 4 times, both episode 1 and 2. So in the back of my mind, I've got a pretty firm idea of what I'm going to do. And I think it is that, just pre-book it and then tell them where I'm going to be.
Yeah.
I think that gives you the advantage of keeping that flexibility.
Mm-hmm. It does. It does. Mm. I did use Correos when I was on the Camino Inglés in 2022, and I prepaid and I entered in every stage that I thought I wanted to do. The problem was then I couldn't change my stages easily. I couldn't go in and go, no, I'm not going there. I'm going to go there instead. I could easily add a rest day, but I couldn't change the end of the stage without sending them an email and waiting for a reply. So that's the pro tip, is to wait until the day before to put in where you're going the next day. Don't preload your entire itinerary unless you have pre-booked your accommodations, which you're not doing.
No. So I envisioned, and you can, you know, this is my romantic idea, is I'm going to walk to wherever I'm going that day. And then, you know, after I've had a shower and settled in, I'm going to sit in the Plaza Mayor with my glass of wine or my adult drink, and I'm going to look at my little spreadsheet and I'm going to listen to my new friends and work out, right, well, tomorrow I'm feeling great. Let's go here. Or, oh, it was a tough day today. It's raining. It's horrible. I'm only going to walk to here. And then I'll fill in my little luggage transfer and say, right, come on, little, my bag, and we'll just go to here. And just perfect. Do a day or two ahead, I think, just to keep that flexibility. And
I think that's great. Happens. I'm going to need your schedule so I know which Plaza Mayor to meet you in.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Now, my next question. So I finish my Camino, then I go back and I do another Camino with my parents. And so I'm hoping to get 2 certificates. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, I'm picturing being finished with mum and dad, and they're going to be so excited that they've even physically done it, and it'll be surreal. And then we've got about, in our spreadsheet, about 14 days of holiday before we have to fly back to Australia. Mm. So I actually haven't planned any part of this, part of the trip, because I've been too busy trying to work out all the other logistics for, you know, 2 Caminos. So I guess I've been listening to your podcast and what other people are doing and things like that. And I was just want to run a couple of scenarios by you and just get your thoughts.
Yes.
I've got about 12 days at the end, and I was thinking, you know, it'd be really nice. I've actually booked a couple of nights accommodation in Santiago already, just managed to do that. And then out of those 12 days, I've allowed for a day in Madrid prior to leaving, so to have a look around, and then a travel day from wherever I am back to Madrid, hopefully by train. So that leaves about 8 days. Now, for mum, this is far more a spiritual journey than a physical one. Now, the physical part of this journey is going to be really tough, but she's doing it for the spiritual reasons. She's lost friends to breast cancer, and she's a survivor of breast cancer. And I think she feels a lot of guilt that she made it and her 2 best friends didn't. And I think that's why it's a lot. It's a big burden. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what's driving her to do this. And somehow I've got to make it work, Nancy. Like, to tell you the truth, I'm so stressed and so anxious that she's physically not going to be able to do this. I've got to find a way to get her to Santiago. And it might mean she only walks half of those daily small stages and I put her in a cab and I physically walk and get a stamp. It's cheating, Kate. You can't do that. But I don't know. My dad will do it. He's doing it to support her.
Yeah.
Anyway, So we've got to the end. We've been through this mammoth journey. What do I do with those 8 days? Like, my mum is suggesting she could never walk an entire Camino. So she's really keen. She's been listening to you and what your parts in your podcast. She wants to hire a car and go back along the trail and see the key things. And I think one of the really big things she wants to do is go to the Cruz de Ferro and lay down a stone for her friends.
Yeah. And do that.
Yeah. And I know I've already been there, but I don't know. It's really important to her. So that was on my mind, that I think that's really important, that I take her and show her, look, this is how far I've walked. You know, she'll be like, wow, you know, this is, you know, I think it'll be, it's important for them to see what I've achieved, because I am going to do it. It might be really slow. I might be like a tortoise, but I'm going to finish.
Darn it.
And then, you know, people say, oh, I'll go to Porto for a couple of days on the train because that's amazing. So maybe I should do that first. And then do I do that after Santiago? And then do I go along the trail? And then do I zip up to Bilbao? Or, you know, do I go to San Sebastian? Or do I just literally follow the trail back to Pamplona? And then I know Pamplona is your favorite city. Mm-hmm. And then just train it to Madrid from there and just soak in El Camino and let it absorb and just maybe to see how it unfolds and go back along the trail and then come back to Australia. I don't know. I don't know what to do, and I haven't had time to plan it yet. So
the biggest challenge will be deciding what to do. And it might not be something you can decide until you're there. It might be something you have to wait to see what you're feeling like. I would start to look for themes. What kind of a theme do you want for the end of it? Do you want something reflective? Do you want something like pilgrimage still, where you journey to the Cross of Iron, you journey to the cathedral in León and the cathedral in Burgos? And if you have any interest in human history, go to Atapuerca and visit where the oldest remains in Europe were found. Another thought would be to go to Fatima. Do you have Catholic root?
Yes, my family's Catholic.
Yeah, so Fatima in Portugal might be a good pilgrimage destination that's close enough to Santiago, close enough to Porto. Porto is an incredibly beautiful, wonderful city. It is the home of port wine, which was one of my great discoveries 1 year, that dessert wine is a thing. And those are my two favorite words. So let's go with that. The Douro River Valley is exquisite. If you wanted to do some sightseeing or slow sightseeing along the Douro Valley, that would be an incredible thing to do. And from there, I'd have to look at a map, but Fatima's not too far away from those places. There's also Braga in Portugal, which is this exquisite church with, you've probably seen photos of the iconic staircase that leads up to it. It was one of my big deal visits when I went to Portugal last year. Just absolutely beautiful. So it's sort of thematic is what it feels like. Do you want to visit pilgrimage sites or significant religious sites? If you go back along the Camino, I've done this a bunch of times where I've hired a car and just driven the route and visited. For you, it would be visiting places you've just walked through and going the opposite direction. For them, it would be you sharing what your journey has been and the places that were significant to you. And you'll have stories in your mind and actually in your heart and soul, because they just happened at the pace of walking. And you'll be able to go back and say, this is where I met this person, and this is where I had this conversation, and this was an incredible meal. Let's go eat there. And you'll be able to take them through the paces of what you've just completed. Now, hiring a car is super easy. There are several car hire companies that have offices right by the train station. And so you can just go pick up a car and drive out of the city. If you would like an automatic transmission car, I'd go to the airport for that, because it's not likely you'll get one in the city center, but probably drive a manual anyway. Yeah, being from Australia. And then one thing to consider is, if you're going to drive as far as Pamplona, you're certainly not going to drive back to Santiago to return the car. And the one-way drop-off fees can be a little on the high side. So one option is simply to drive yourselves to Madrid and return it to the airport in Madrid. And then you don't have to pay for 3 train tickets to get back to Madrid, only the cost of fuel. So that might be an option. A one-way car rental from Santiago to Madrid is probably cheaper than a one-way car rental from Santiago to Pamplona, just as an example, but it's worth checking out.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's a lot of possibility all in that conversation.
And that's the thing. You've got this whole opportunity, but it's really hard to pinpoint what do we want to do? And, I'm really waiting for mom and dad to tell me what do they want to do. Like, I feel very blessed that they're, jumping on a plane and coming all the way over to support me on my pilgrimage. So yes, it would be nice just to, relax, but at the same time, it's about their pilgrimage too. What do they need? Mm-hmm. How do they want to finish? What reflection do they need? And what time out do they need to process before they come back to be parents and grandparents and, absorb back into that busyness of life, So I'm trying to be mindful of what their needs are going to be as well.
Yeah, it's hard to say.
Yeah.
It's hard to say what they will be. But it certainly can be a conversation of, hey, there's lots of options. There's lots of things we could do. What might feel right? What might we want to at least investigate? So even if you don't make commitments, you can find out, how do we get to Porto? How do we get a rental car? How do we get, how far is it from Santiago to Pamplona? It's more than 700 kilometers. How far is it from Pamplona to Madrid? And just sort of put the puzzle pieces onto the table so that you can see which ones you want to connect.
Thank you. I think I will. I'll just wait.
Yeah.
I'll get all the other stuff sorted first.
And then and when you're walking, you'll be walking through going, I've got to show this to my parents, or, I don't think they'd be interested in this, And it's fairly easy to get a good price on a rental car without too much notice. I mean, I wouldn't leave it to 3 days before, but I've gotten good prices on rental cars a week out. So if you decide that's the route that you want to go, you certainly could get online and find a rental car.
Okay. I might wait then. Thank you.
Yeah.
Another key point I really wanted to make, Nancy, when we were talking about conditioning and the importance of conditioning for the trail, it's not just conditioning for the walking part of the trail. Like, if you're an older person, like my parents are, the way I had to reframe it to get the buy-in from my mum was, I need you to condition for travel fitness as well. Like, I need you to do that training so that you're fit. I need you to be able to walk across cobblestones. I need you to be able to get up and down stairs by yourself without my dad, because he's going to be busy with 2 suitcases. You can't hold your arm and, help you up the stairs. I need you to be fit to get on and off a train and to be just that independence and mobility. Like, you can't rely on my dad because he's busy with 2 suitcases. Do you know what I mean?
That's a great point.
The Camino is for everybody, and we all come at it from different walks of life, from different fitness levels and things like that. So I think it's a really important point that if you are older and you have, some challenges, and we all have challenges, both physical and mental, it doesn't matter what they are, but conditioning, I think, is really important for physical aspect, but also for the, the challenges of just getting there and the day-to-day aspect, because this is not normal life.
No, and travel is not for the faint of heart. Travel is sort of sexy and glamorous, but when you're in it, it's not. It's work.
It's really hard.
It's work. And by the way, I'm hungry. Where do I get food? And is there a bathroom anywhere other than that box in the back of the bus that I will, my motion sickness will kick into high gear if I try to go down that aisle? This is not for the faint of heart.
And so I guess that's how I've had to reframe it with my mum, to make her understand and to get that buy-in, that it's not, you're not training for an Olympic gold medal. I'm just training you. I need you to be conditioned for the extra walking, because she's going to do far more walking on per day as a tourist when she's sightseeing.
That's right.
And then she doesn't earn her normal life. So I've tried to really reframe it to get her to understand. And I think I've won finally.
make sure your feet love those shoes, whatever those shoes are that you'll be walking around the city in. Yeah.
Oh, no, I've got her into good shoes. It's all right.
Good.
Sort of. Yeah, no, I'm good at that sort of stuff. And, you know, they're well prepared. But, yeah.
Mm. Well, it's going to be an extraordinary journey. And it will be something that you will cherish and treasure, having shared it with your parents.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to it. I think it'd be really special to have someone to share it with. You know, not the whole journey, that's mine, but
yeah,
another part of it with them.
Very good. Very good. Any other questions?
As you know, I'm going to mostly stay in Albuquerque's. And yeah. I've just, you know, on rest days, I probably will stay in the odd a private accommodation here and there. But for me, my Camino is all about connection and community as well. And so that's one of the reasons I'm wanting to experience that Albuquerque thing. I never did the backpacking thing when I was in my 20s. I don't know. I was too busy building my career and you know, I didn't go to Europe and backpack around. And so I see this as my do-over to have that experience. But I've only just started the whole sleeping bag thing, which, you know, I'm leaving pretty late, really. In my mind, I thought I was just going to take a sleep liner and, you know, because it's volume, not the weight of the luggage if I'm using luggage transfer, even though I know I've got to keep it at 15 kilos. It's the more about the volume.
Mm-hmm.
But because I'm going in the end of sort of winter into spring, but then I'm going to finish in summer, it's a challenge. And I'm worried now that I've actually physically seen a sleep liner, even though it's a fleece one, it's not going to be enough for the beginning. And I just don't know what to do. Do I research and get a sleeping bag that condenses into a really small volume? Or do I just take my sleep liner with some thermals and knowing I'm going to be a bit cold the first maybe few weeks? Or I don't know. I'm really struggling.
This is one of those things that there's no perfect answer because it is a 44-day trip. If it were a week trip, this would be an easy answer. But because you're going to be changing seasons, essentially, it's not quite so straightforward. So one option is to bring both. And when it gets warm, send that sleeping bag to Santiago for pickup at the end. And you can do that using the Correos system and they'll hold it for you. You'll have to pay for them to ship it and hold it, but then you get it out of your bag. The other option is just to stuff it down at the bottom of the bag and not take it out every night once you're done using it. Yeah. And then the other option is to just go ahead with just the liner and trust that there will be blankets at the albergues. But I will say, and I say this every so often, if you're staying in the albergue in Roncesvalles, right after you go over the Pyrenees, there are no blankets. There are no blankets. And so if you're staying in that albergue, you want a sleeping bag or you're going to be wearing every piece of clothing that you wear in April.
And that's my concern. I'm a cold frog.
Yeah, you're going to need some warmth then. Yeah, for sure.
Mm. And I suppose my final question, like last year from your podcast, I've been listening and we've heard, I've actually purposely not really dived into Facebook and things like that. I'm not a Facebook person, but from your podcast and from the other viewers, you know, last year they had the huge, probably the greatest number of walkers, pilgrims ever. I'm just wondering, we're coming, just started the pilgrim season for 2024. What are your thoughts or have you heard any snippets? How busy do you think it's going to be this year? And, you know, you hear the panic in other pilgrims' voices about, you know, making sure they've booked all the way. And I'm like, oh, no, I think I'd like a bit more flexibility. But then, you know, every now and then I've had trouble trying to find somewhere to stay, but I've solved that by being a bit more flexible.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just wondering, and I suppose this is the million-dollar question I'm sitting on, but I just, what are you hearing, Nancy, from... You're very well connected and from the global world of pilgrimage, like, is it going to be horrendously busy this year or we don't know? Like, what little insights can you give me? I know I'm your recce for your Camino group because I'm about a week ahead and I'll be, hey.
You are. You're going to be, I think, 2 weeks ahead of my May group. So you'll be sending reports. Okay, guys. Okay. You need to know this. Yeah. So it is difficult to say. One of the things that I have heard from the owner of the Camino de Santiago.me English language forum, that's Ivar in Santiago, he tracks interaction on his forum. for how many people ask certain questions and how many people comment. I didn't follow really closely how he tracks these metrics, but he said based on the questions and the activity on his forum, he is expecting it to be busier this year than last year. And he did the same thing last year. He looked at the questions and he looked at the pattern and the increase in interaction on the forum and predicted that last year would be busier than ever. And so he's done that again. He said 2024 is going to be even busier than 2023. So I think the thing to focus on is what does it mean when it's busy?
Mm.
And what is your particular concern about it being busy? So if you have in your mind an idea that you'll be walking on the trail alone without lots of pilgrims around, that probably won't happen, Sarya de Santiago, ever. Except if you remember back to Judith's conversation, she shared that because she walked slowly, even Sarya de Santiago, she was alone on the trail at times because people would scoot out before her and get way ahead of her. The people from the last town would not catch up to her yet. So she was nice and lonely and quiet on the trail a good amount of time. So will the trail be busy? Yes and no. And if it's too busy for you, all you do is take a break and let them get ahead. Or get up super early and be the first one out of town and walk ahead of everybody. So there are ways to have the trail to yourself. What I think most people are asking when they ask about busy is, will I be able to find a bed? Or will I be racing to find a bed every day? And there's no way to know that until you're actually on the trail and see how many pilgrims are on the exact stage that you're on when you're on it. And what a lot of people will do is stay at what they call off stage. So the Brierley guidebook lays out 33 stages. And many pilgrims will follow that plan, stop at the city or town at the end of each stage. If you look instead between those stages and stay at towns and cities between those stages, you do have a better chance of finding someplace to stay if it's really busy, because people are less likely to stay at those little tiny villages or that small town that has only one or two albergues instead of the city that has six.
Mm.
Yeah, but I don't know. Let's see what happens kind of circumstance. I do have a friend in Pamplona. He runs the Caminoteca shop, which is the gear shop run by two former pilgrims, and they curate their inventory specifically for pilgrims. And he is my guy on the street. And so I'll be checking in with him probably around the second week of April. And I picked second week of April because Easter is on March 31st this year. That's when it starts getting busy. And last year, what happened, it was super busy around Easter, and then it never calmed down until the end of May. Usually there's a surge around Easter, and then it's quiet until the 1st of May. I anticipate, based on what I'm reading on Facebook groups and how many people are going, I'm going this date in April, 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 April. I think April's going to be our new busy month.
Yeah, I agree, because I had trouble getting some accommodation in this stage between Roncesvalles and Pamplona. Mm-hmm. I have managed to get some, but it wasn't my first choice, and that's okay.
Yeah.
But I have booked an Alberti bunk bed, and it's easy because it's only one, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, so I'm using that as a bit of a guide. I was like, oh, I reckon it's going to be busy.
I think it will be, but we'll see. We really, truly won't know until we start getting reports from the trail.
Yeah, and that's okay. It's fine. It's all good.
Yeah.
Last question, Nancy. You've reminded me, Casa Ivar or Ivan in Santiago. If I didn't want to carry my bag when I do the bit from Santiago to Finisterre to Mashir and just take what I need, because by then I'm...
You'll be so strong.
And I'll have no blisters and I'll be fit as a fiddle and...
Yeah.
Cruising along. I'm pretty sure I've heard and I've seen on YouTube, he'll mind my bag in Santiago, won't he? Or so
yes.
Will the pilgrim office. Yeah, I could just...
Not the pilgrim's office, but the Correos office does luggage storage. And they are now open 7 days a week for drop off and pick up, which is good because it's really awkward if you can't pick up your bag because it's Sunday and you have to go get your flight. So the Correos and Casa Ivar, and also Pilgrim House, which is this wonderful oasis in the city, very close to Casa Ivar's new location, run by two Americans, Nate and Faith. And they are a Christian-based organization, and they offer a number of services to pilgrims. And what you do is you just go in there, and they have space where you can just sit and reflect. Or if you want to talk to somebody about your experience, they'll just sit and talk with you and listen and hear what you have to say about your experience. And they store luggage. So yeah, there are a number of places in Santiago where you can do that.
Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah.
And another question. Sorry, I have so many questions.
No, you're fine.
When I look at my spreadsheet, I've identified an opportunity across the Meseta that by then my fitness should be back to usual Kate fitness, and I'm going to be feeling really strong, and
yes,
I potentially are going to be back to doing, you know, my goal of maybe 25-30 Ks a day, only because I'm conscious I've got mum and dad. I've got to, you know, I've got this little, you know, in the background that I don't want to leave them unsupported, you know, for too many days, but at the same time, it's my journey. I'm picturing the Meseta to be like the Mallee, very gentle rolling hills, wheat fields, no really steep incline and down, you know. So I see that as an opportunity not to gain a little bit of time, maybe, like to do those longer distances. Would you agree or disagree?
Yes. And in fact, many of the guides and stage plans lay out longer stages on the Meseta for that very reason. There is one place where there is a hill. It's after the town of Castro Heres, where you have to go up on a plateau, and it's a very steep, it's only about a kilometer, but it's very steep. And then you come down the other side. But other than that, it is mostly just rolling, very gently rolling hills.
And I sort of think that's, you know, John Briley talks about the three stages and the journey, and that's the mindfulness stage.
Mm-hmm.
And on one hand, I'm a bit nervous too, because I've looked at the itinerary and it's about what, 7 days of horizon and nothingness in your own mind. And I'm a bit anxious about what's going to come out, what's packed down in the bottom
sure.
of my head, you know, and like looking forward to it, but it's like, what are all those little things I've filed away that are all those little drawers are going to open? And I'm like, oh yes, deal with that, bang. Oh yeah, deal with that. But I might get sick of being just with me and, you know, just want to speed that up a little bit. I don't know.
Well, and you might. And the other thing is there will be other pilgrims to talk to. You're not out in the wilderness alone in days of silence. There will be pilgrims walking that part as well. Also, there are plenty of towns and villages, and the hospitality on the Meseta is wonderful.
Mm.
So you'll have people to talk to and interact with, practice your Spanish if you like.
Oh, yeah, I've been practicing. I'm not very good, but, you know,
okay.
I'll try.
Buenos dias, buenas tardes. Got to start there.
Exactly, yeah.
All right.
Common courtesies.
Yes, yes. Well, we have covered quite a lot of ground, haven't we?
Certainly have.
I really appreciate you coming on the podcast. I think I really love your story, and I love hearing more about it, more than what we can get on our monthly Zoom calls. So that for me is really a treat to get to know you more.
Thank you.
All right. So I want to take us back as we wrap up to, I'm going to use your words, the finish line. You talked about your dad wanting to be there at the finish line when you arrived in Santiago, and it sounds like you'll be walking in together.
Potentially.
So I'd like you to imagine your first arrival in Santiago. And then we'll imagine your second arrival into Santiago. But let's start with the first one. You're in Santiago. You've just walked in. How are you feeling? What are you thinking?
I think it'd be surreal. I think it'd be surreal after all this planning and preparation and drive to get there. It'd be surreal. But I think the key thing that I'm going to feel is just immense gratitude. Mm-hmm. Gratitude to my team, my allied health team that have put me back together to get there. You know, this injury is really hiccuped. This injury, not my old injury, that was years ago, but this current injury has really put a dent in my preparation. And, you know, it's been a real challenge to get back. And, wow, it's just tough, you know, for anyone.
Yeah.
And so the team that has come around me to support me and has believed that I can get to that start line has been amazing. Like, you talk about once you commit to the Camino, about it just happens, like, you know, once you commit, then it just unfolds. And so I think for me, it's very, very true. Like, so I'm just going to feel immense gratitude to my team that have got me fit and well and to the start line and the finish line. And then I'm going to feel, I think I would consider myself quite strong already, but I think I'm going to have a new inner strength that I can do anything, you know.
I do know that one.
Adversity, there was always challenges in life and that, you know, you can do it. And then just that inner strength and confidence of achieving something and something difficult, you know, like from all the way down in Australia, looking up going, oh, you know, yeah, it's just, and I hope I'm an inspiration. I hope I'm an inspiration to everyone, my young nieces and nephews, to women of a certain age, to anyone that's had to overcome adversity, whether it's whatever it is, it doesn't matter whether it's physical, mental, emotional, like just if you want to do something, you can do it. Yeah. Just take baby steps. And Nancy's Camino Guide is the baby steps to get it.
It's the baby step manual.
It is the baby step manual because when, like, you go, oh, I'm going to go and do this walk. Oh, can I please have 6 weeks off? And then you start planning and go, geez Louise, I can't, it's going to take me 2 full days to get to Europe, let alone.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah, so.
And you don't know until you break out that planning calendar and write it out and then go, hold on a second. Day zero, I fly from my home airport. I'm not instantly in Europe. That's going to take this long. Then I have to have a full day to get from my entry airport to Saint-Jean. But the time doesn't line up on those timetables, which I didn't realize until I looked at it. And now how am I going to do that? Yeah, that's why I do it that way.
Yeah. And then, so I think that confidence and then just that joy of doing something for me. The well-being for me. This is my well-being. This is my mindfulness.
You're going to have a new relationship to those words.
Mm.
Well-being and mindfulness. Mm-hmm. Oh, I can't wait to hear. Well, I hope you'll come back on the podcast and tell us how it goes.
Oh, absolutely. I'd be thrilled. Or
tell us how it went. That's how we'll be looking at it. Tell us how it went. Yeah, great. Well, Kate, thank you so much. This has been just wonderful. Such fun to hang out with you. Thank you.
Oh, no, thank you, Nancy. It has been an absolute privilege to, you know, to be on this journey with you and to be a guest on your podcast. And I really hope I've added value.
You absolutely have. All right. Thanks, Kate.
Bye.
Bye.